Good morning, and welcome to It's a New Day. Here are your hosts, Willard and Betty Thiessen.
Good morning. We want to welcome you to It's a New Day. Today, stay with us. I know that's going to be a great program, and I know that God wants to touch your life today.
Well, the Lord wants to bless us. There's no question about that, and encourage us. Betty, I'm looking forward to it. Dr. James Stone is back with us today. He was with us for a period of time. I think it's just about a year ago now. Maybe it's... I didn't even ask him how far long it was, and I don't remember those things, but I know you're going to enjoy him very much. Got some interesting perspectives to talk about. We'll be starting off in the book of Mark, probably chapter 4, and getting on from there, and talking about the parable of the sower. Dr. Stone, he's with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm going to get it straight this time. He told me last time he was here I had a hard time with Baton Rouge. But anyway, it's good to have you back with us.
It's my privilege to be back with you.
Good. Looking forward to the time, as a matter of fact. Can I give people a little bit of background?
Sure.
You were a seminary professor for quite a few years. Pastored a church prior to that time, I believe it was.
And 17 years pastoring, 17 years in academic world.
And then left that, and you're now kind of in an itinerant ministry in a very different thing that you'd been doing at all before any of those things.
Oh, it's amazing how I jokingly say that the Lord's taken me out of the ministry. But more ministry now is occurring than before. It's just when I started what God is doing about 5, 6, 7 years ago, I mentioned that we were a new ministry was being formed. Mm-hmm. And sort of like Abraham, we didn't know where we were going. But what an understatement. Where he's taken us is completely out of the ministry. And yet... still ministry is occurring, but
in a very different context from what you'd experienced prior to that
time. Yeah, the emphasis shifting.
I know this is not where we're going to be focusing and spending all our time, but let's just chat about that. Just, you know, where is your ministry taking place now? How is it taking place that makes it so different from where it was?
Well, before, ministry was me doing something for you. See, whether I was preaching or whether I was teaching, I was doing something for you. In fact, I was actually using you for my ministry. See, and so now what God has done is taken me out of that, and now I know I live in you. See, so ministry is occurring between me and you, and that's the only place ministry can occur is in relationships. When we hear the word ministry, our boxes lock on up here, and we think of a professional thing we're doing. Mm-hmm. Whether we're preaching or teaching a class or praying for someone, mm-hmm. or helping, mm-hmm. for someone. See, we have it's kind of a formalized, institutionalized concept that has developed in our mind, but that's totally foreign in the New Testament. Ministry in the New Testament is actually what occurs among people. So that's what I mean by taking me out of the ministry, is taking me out of that formal setting to where I preached to you, I taught to you, I helped, mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. and, which, mm-hmm. basically meant I was using you to try to get my fulfillment out of my ministry. See, so I was trying to get my identity out of my doing for God, rather than experiencing the love of God through you that gave me my identity. As I entered in your life, mm-hmm. and you entered, mm-hmm. in my life, then I experienced the love, the affection, the acceptance, the approval, and so I had a sense of well-being. Well, before, I was trying to get that sense of well-being out of my doing. And so I actually ended up using you rather than living in you. So it's changed.
It's really quite a radical.
Oh.
And it's the outside may not look different, but the heart from where you come,
yes.
is, yeah. totally different.
Yeah. And the outside takes on a different gentry, a different environment. Because you lose the presumptuousness of being the one up here and they're down here. See, you lose that, and you come down to where we're right here.
Yeah, we're together in this. We're sharing this together. This is, yeah. God's doing something among us.
Yeah, and really what happens is that this is really scary at first, because it countered everything I had been taught. I'm the professor teaching preachers and pastors and how to pastor a church and do whatever, and so I know all the things we said. But what it does, it has destroyed the vertical hierarchy in what we have developed in the church. And I've come to recognize there is no vertical hierarchy of authority in the church. It's rather a horizontal sequence. See, for example, I could illustrate it by Trinity, first, second, and third person. Mm-hmm. See, well, when we see first, second, and third person, we just automatically, even though we don't maybe do it consciously, three is somewhat less than two, and two is somewhat less than one, and we go one, two, three.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
See, and yet it's not that way. Jesus said, no man has seen God at any time except the Son, the only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, declares Him. So out of the bosom of the Father comes the Son. See, and out of the Father and the Son comes the Holy Spirit. One, two, three. See,
yes.
now we put that into the New Testament in 1 Corinthians, and He gave first apostles, and He gave first apostles, secondary prophets, third teachers. After that, miracles. We again develop one, two, three. And what opened that up to me was in Romans 10, where Paul's talking about the same thing, but there's no sense of vertical hierarchy when he says it here. He says, whoever shall call upon the Lord shall be saved. But how can they call unless they believe? How can they believe unless they hear?
Right?
How can they hear unless there's a preacher? How can it be a preacher unless they're sent? See, no vertical.
No, this is all horizontal.
It's
a sequence.
Sequence. And so when you come back, how can the preacher go as he's sent? It just dawned on me, I bet you that word sent is the word apostle.
It just came as you were talking about that. Just because a sent one is apostolic or in the Greek. But
in
anyway.
The Greek, yeah. It's the word that we translate apostle. It's the same word that we get apostle from. See, in fact, it's translated sent more times in the New Testament than apostle. Then
never knew that.
Apostle's not a translation.
Never knew that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Apostle's not a translation. It's a transliterated.
Yeah.
It's carried right out of the Greek into the English. We would probably have been better off if they'd translated it every time instead of
using the word apostle, because apostle is a Greek word, really.
Yeah.
Which simply
means
a sent one. I mean, yeah, which would he used every time if that would have been the case?
Exactly right. See, if we had that idea, one who is sent and one who goes in the power of the one who sends him, is really, I think, the essence. You see?
Right.
And so if I'm sent, I'm going to preach. And if I preach, there's going to be teaching going on. If there's going to be teaching, there's going to be hearing going on. And if you're hearing, you're going to believe.
That's
and
right.
If you believe, you're going to have salvation. See, it's a sequential thing. And so that's what it's done. It's just reshaped the ministry for me. And that's what I mean, taking me out of the ministry, because it's destroyed that vertical hierarchy. Now, it's easy to sit here this morning and talk about it, but we're talking about a process of time, and James didn't want that vertical hierarchy to be destroyed.
Well, you hide your identity in that hierarchy,
yes.
Didn't you?
I mean, yes, that's where I was getting my identity. That's where I was getting my sense of fulfillment, is I was looked up to as the preacher, the pastor, and I was being somewhat successful, so I was getting mm-hmm. positive feedback,
right.
So I was getting my identity in that. Instead of Jesus. And what kept coming through, you know, I kept saying, but God, he said, but I'm your identity. But God, I'm your source. You know? And it just kept coming, and amazing, he just kept taking those things away. Now see, what I'd like to be able to set here is that I had a quiet time with the Lord, and the Lord revealed this to me, and
yeah.
Forever after that, I was changed.
Right.
But it didn't
sounds
happen.
Good, but doesn't work that way.
It does not happen that way. In fact, someone said it this way. We were riding down the car one time, and had the car full, and my wife was sitting in the front seat with me, and his back seat was full, and one guy spoke up, a friend of mine. He said, you know, when you stepped out 4 years ago by faith, that was a great step of faith that you taken to step away from a paycheck, either pastoring or college professor, and I was trying to formalize a good answer, you know, and my
right.
wife spoke up and said, well, really, it's more circumstances. So really what it was God working in the circumstances that got me there rather than a fine, lofty decision that I made that got me there. Well, I've come to recognize that in reality, if you look back in your life, it's always been the circumstances of God moving your life that got you where you wanted to go. See, and until pressure came, and I think this is true across the board, we never make progress towards where we should be going. We'll never do that until pressure comes on us and forces us out of our comfort zone, forces us to cry out to God in order for Him to move us where He wants us to go. See, so I've come to recognize that God works intricately in the circumstances of my life to get me where I want to go. So it just takes me out of the picture altogether.
But starts putting more understanding. I mean, here's God at work. He's a bigger God very
yes.
often. He is much larger
yes.
in working in my life than I would want to give. You know, we want to find, because we find identity in who we are, in our ability to make decisions, though, we find it difficult to give God that kind of credit.
Oh, we can't, because if we do, it means my ability to make the decision, it's not my ability to make the decision. And see, and that comes down to, we're talking about the very issue of Christianity. See, the very core of what it really means to be Christian. And it's just amazingly, I would not have said this 5 years ago or 6 years ago, but I've come gradually to come to recognize that it is indeed 100% Jesus and nothing me. And when I make that statement to people, I don't think you probably thought it, but as a whole, when I
well,
make that statement...
don't give me that much credit. Don't give me that much credit, okay?
Well, I try to keep from getting crucified too many times. Learning like Paul to put the God forbids in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I find when you say 100% Jesus and nothing us, the thought that ring comes to your mind immediately, well, I got to do something. See, because we don't understand the gospel enough to know that if it's 100% Jesus, it means I'm just a puppet on a string, and I have no free will. See, I have no freedom of choice, and I've come to recognize that we've twisted that freedom a little bit. Our freedom to choose what we hold dearly to in Western mm-hmm. civilization is actually a product of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. See, because they wanted this fruit to be able to make them wise so they would know good, so they would know evil.
And make right choices.
And make right choices, which puts them in control of their destiny.
Yeah, well, that was Adam and Eve. We're going back to the Garden of Eden. Just for some of you wondering, what tree are we talking about? We're talking about the two trees in the garden. Go on.
Yeah, which is, I've come to recognize those trees are in our lives every day.
Right.
You see, even we're not discrediting the fact that it was there in the garden. They were there in the garden, but what they represent is in our life. You see, so when I want to be able to be in control of my destiny.
Oh, and that was what Eve and Adam were struggling with in the garden.
Exactly right. But I'm a nice guy.
Well, sure you are.
for wanting
to have the ability to make right choices seems like a tremendously good idea.
Yeah, and so I want to make the right choices. I want to choose God's way. See, you know, I'm not as these bums out here who's choosing their own way. I'm choosing God's way. But there's no difference between me and this guy out here. See, I'm still in control of my life.
Because I'm the one making the choosing.
Yes,
that's the point.
That's the point. See, I'm the one making the decision. I'm still in control of my life. That's what we all want. See, we want that identity myself. See, and so I'm going to make the choice myself. Oh, I'm going to choose God. I'm going to do right. Some of the time.
Well, we don't include that part.
No, we don't. We don't talk about the part that which we don't want to see keeps popping up, you know, and that which we want to do, we can't quite get there all the time. But that's the reality. But see, I'm going to choose. Well, that's the struggle. Well, that's a freedom of choosing that comes out of the tree. Our freedom we have is a freedom of rejection. Now, when I say a freedom of rejection,
okay.
you can push that back a little bit further and say, you're making a choice to reject. Well, our rejection really doesn't come from a choice. Our rejection actually comes out of deception. See, when God loves me,
yes.
and through the course of this week, we're going to talk about that,
yep.
God loving us and His light shines
sure.
into our heart. And if we could just let that light shine in our heart, that light itself contains the power to drive out all darkness. See, but I won't let the light shine in my heart. See, I have that freedom to reject. And that rejection comes out of assuming that I can do that. See, I don't make a conscious decision to say, okay, here's God and here's me, I'm going to choose me. If I offer you life, you're going to choose life.
Right.
But the reason why we're not experiencing life is we're deceived in thinking where life is at. See, and that's where the deception comes in. We think, as a kid, if I could just get to make my decisions, if I could just get away from, become independent to make my decisions, if I could just be my own man.
Some of us want to leave home just for that reason, so we can make our own decisions.
No. Yeah. And I look back in my life, and decisions I made hadn't been too good. In fact, Paul said it this way, and pulls right in. And in fact, this principle we're talking about is throughout the New Testament. It is the underlying theme of the New Testament and the Old Testament. But Paul said, this is our rejoicing, the testimony of our mm-hmm. conscience, mm-hmm. that in simplicity and godly sincerity, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God, we have had our conversation or our manner of living in this world and more abundantly towards you. See, he's stating that and he goes on in the context to talk about everyday decisions. His everyday living is a product of the grace of God, not a product of fleshly wisdom. Now, fleshly wisdom doesn't mean choosing bad things. Fleshly wisdom means the concept of choosing. See, using our mind to mm-hmm. to make a decision, which is flesh. It's flesh. It's soulish. It's in the intellect, the emotions, and the will, not in the spirit.
Yeah, it's a natural man instead
it's
of the spirit
man. It's the natural man.
Yeah.
Yes, the natural man. Yeah. And basically what we're doing in Christianity today is trying to live spiritually, naturally.
That's right. You're absolutely using our natural resources to be the kind of person we presume a spirit person would be.
Yeah. And you never get there. And you can't get there because you can't. To move out of the natural realm into the spiritual realm, there's no act of the natural can do it. There's no act of the flesh can move you into the spiritual realm. See, and we keep trying to do that with spiritual in that same passage.
Well, and that's why we do spiritual things.
Oh.
If I can, spiritual acts,
yeah.
All those kinds of things, because we think by doing them, that makes us spiritual.
Okay, let's name a couple of those spiritual things.
Oh, you aren't going to get me to do that. No, but hey.
Well, I'll name them and say that the comments of the guests is not responsibility of those.
No, but if you're going to church.
Yes, there we go.
Okay, just for the sake of being spiritual,
yes.
Wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, now if I am going and I'm participating in fellowship, and
yes.
I'm going to use that term instead of going to church, because according to what I understand, it's an assembling together of people that have a like faith in
yeah.
Jesus Christ,
yes. Yes.
And they go to mutually edify
yeah.
and build one another up.
Yes.
That to me is
yes.
what?
Experiencing the love of God in our relationships.
In one another in relationship.
Yes.
That's church.
Yes.
Now, any other reason is wanting to be spiritual by doing.
Yeah, it's
thing.
A
okay.
nice religious
okay.
act.
Anyway, there's a million other ones.
Well,
too.
Jesus uses it. He gives us a perfect parable.
Oh, boy.
The publican and the Pharisees went up to the temple to pray. Went to church. They're praying. And he says, I thank God. I'm not as other. He's worshiping. He says, I pay my tithes. I fast. I'm a decent guy. See, those are nothing wrong in those self.
No.
But when they become, as he introduces the parable by saying, you have this parable of those who trusted in themselves. See, in other words, those doing
yes.
of those things was how he thought he was going to get there. So that's what you meant by we keep trying to do spiritual things to get there.
Yeah.
See, and that's where the error becomes, is because we're trying to do fleshly, mm-hmm. Temporal things to move into the spiritual realm, and you can't do it. Now, when the spirit has control, you will see the interaction here.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
There'll yeah. be a natural talking yeah. to Jesus and a natural yeah. sharing of Jesus, but we don't have that natural thing flowing because Jesus is alive in us, and so we try to create them by the flesh doing them. See, and you can't do it. You just can't do it. And what God's got to bring us back to is the same thing he did when we got saved. We have to come back to the point of realization that we've messed it up again.
I can't do it. I can't be spiritual.
Yeah.
And I can't, as religious as I am, it isn't bringing spirit life to me
yeah.
by doing, making my choices.
Yeah. And moving into the grace of God is choices will be made. But it would be just a natural flowing of God doing it, not out of the activity of our mind. Now, throughout this week, we're going to be talking a lot about that, because that's where the problem's at. This mind is actually what throws us. However, what we're doing in the visible church today, we're trying to get there by our mind. Never in the history of the church and of, you know, and being in academia in all of my, almost all of my life, 36 years altogether, there's a lot of research going on, and I don't think there's ever a time in the history of the church where church people are so concerned about learning. You know, it's just coming. Everybody's got a pencil. Everybody's got a notepad. Everybody is learning. It's seminars. It's coming. Symposiums coming and going. But what grips my heart is Paul's statement that in this day we'll be ever learning and never come to knowledge of the truth.
He did say that.
See, but it's
that's amazing.
Because
okay.
We're trying to learn
yes.
up here.
Yeah.
See, we're trying to learn up here rather than understanding. Understanding truth is an experience with a person. It's not an activity of the mind.
But we don't separate that.
Oh, we
to
don't
us,
separate it.
We don't, you know, for most of us, this is a difficult concept. I mean, that truth is Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Outside of Jesus is no truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I this is really hard. To come to, but because we're taught, he is truth.
Yes.
I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Yes.
And when we're talking about spiritual truth, and the trouble is we have to discern now or separate between what is natural truth and what is spiritual truth. In a way, I mean, in the sense
sure,
that
yes.
there are things that are true in the world, in the natural world, but they do not transcend and remain true in the spirit world.
Exactly right. That's the reason why Paul says, not with fleshly wisdom, but by the grace of God. He's contrasting fleshly wisdom and the grace of God. And what we've got to come to is that the reason why it's difficult to conceive is because you can't get it up here.
Now your heart has to tell you.
It has to do it. And amazingly, it only comes when you begin to recognize, I have no understanding.
Yeah.
I have no capability to understand. Therefore, I quit trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden,
it's there.
It starts coming. See? Now, we all want to understand. See, we all want to experience the ways of God. But the difficulty is the very thing we're doing to try to get there is what's keeping us from getting there.
Okay. Well, we haven't got all the answers yet. But we're going to, Jim, I really appreciate this. Thank you very much, James. I appreciate it. We're going to break. We're going to go to Betty for just a prayer time. And I just want to let you know, for those of you that are getting the half-hour program only, we'll be back tomorrow morning, and we'll be throughout the week. The full one-hour program is available on audio cassette if you'd like to get the balance of this. For those of you in the marketplace, particularly in the Toronto area, I wish we had the full hour there. That day may come. But right now, here's Betty for a prayer time. Stone, and I'll just call him James if he doesn't mind. So
James,
we're getting rid of some of the other trappings. That,
yes.
Well, I'm not going to worry about that. We're talking today about the spirituality.
Yes.
As it really is, and the struggle that we have, even as Christians, as people that believe in Jesus, to want to be perfected by the work of our natural man or our soul or our mind, particularly. And you're talking how there's a tremendous. We're living at a time when the desire for knowledge seems to be on the increase. You know, within the church and everywhere.
Never before. You see a TV program, or you go to church, everybody's got a pencil, everybody got a piece of paper.
Well, they probably got them right now.
Yeah.
And it's not bad on this new day. It's okay.
Yeah.
No.
We're not saying it's wrong.
No. It's what we think is going to produce the difference in our lives. That's the issue.
We have a real honest desire to try to understand the ways of God.
And that's good. That's a real good thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. God puts that desire in it. God himself says that, for it is God which worketh in you both to will. God puts that desire in you. Where we goof up is how we try to fulfill that desire. See, but the rest of Philippians 2:13 says, for it is God which not only does the to-willing, but also the to-doing, his good pleasure.
That's
see,
right.
And that's where we mess up, is we try to get there by ourselves. Let me just share with you a little bit how it's worked out in my life.
Okay.
Coming out of my background and how I was brought up, and we all are the composites of all the things we have experienced and how we respond
sure,
to them.
Sure.
There's nothing else we can be. I am who I am because of what I am, or, you know, just I am my experiences. And coming up to that, I began to recognize that what it means to be Christian was not trying to keep a list of do's and don'ts. See, and like Paul, he said, I through the law became dead to the law. I think what he's meaning there is I tried the law and I found out it don't work. And so that was my struggle too. It didn't work. So I said, well, if Christianity is not keeping a list of do's and don'ts, how then do we live?
Then what is it? Yeah.
See, how then do we live? Well, then the answer came, even though I didn't know what the answer was, what it meant, the answer came, you ought to be spiritual. See, but spiritual to me was, in my background, was a good life of service.
You know? That's sure.
Is what we turn to be spiritual. See, our maybe not so much out of my background, but spiritual would be doing those spiritual things, or going to church, praying, fasting, whatever. See, but I didn't know what spiritual, what it meant to be spiritual. But I God had worked in my life the reality that what it meant to be a Christian was not keeping a list of do's and don'ts, because that makes me just like any other religion. Me doing it.
That's
see,
right.
And I'm not giving permission for loose living, because when God lives in you, the reality of what the law says will be done, will be made. As Paul said, the righteousness of the law will be fulfilled in us. So I came to say, well, how then do we live if we don't live by list? And God said, spiritual. Mm-hmm. You are to be spiritual. Well, then I had to come to understand what spiritual was. Now, see, this was a long period of time, but what made it long was this head up here. See, God couldn't give it to him any faster, because this box up here couldn't accept it any faster. So so he said spiritual. If I knew what spirituality would have been, I'd been there.
You'd have been there. It would have been easy.
Immediately. But this box up here already had pre-described what spiritual meant. So that had to be broken. See, that box had to be broken before the Spirit could come on through to what it means to be spiritual. And basically, we come to recognize what it means to be spiritual. You live of the Spirit. Now, that sounds so simple. But living of the Spirit means He produces it all. See, not how I interpreted to be spiritual. A spiritual person as opposed to a fleshly person. A fleshly person was one who was caught in adultery, fornication, lasciviousness, lying, cheating, stealing. A spiritual person is one who went to church, paid his tithes, worshiped God. See, but then I've come to recognize that both of those can be fleshly.
Exactly.
See, both of those can be fleshly. Now, as far as society is concerned, this over here is much better.
That's right. To be religious is still much better than to be fleshly.
Oh, yes.
As far as contributing to our the well-being of things around you.
Society, yes.
Yeah, but as far as getting to a relationship with God is concerned, it doesn't.
Yeah, or to say it this way, as far as getting to a point of experiencing life.
Yes.
Is okay. Because basically what we've got in the church today is a bunch of, almost like Paul says, we not as many, how many is many, but across Christianity today, we have Christians who are hurting big time. See, we have Christians who are struggling with major problems. They know Jesus is the answer, but they're really not experiencing the answer.
That's right.
See, and so right. I said, God, what's going on here? What's happening? Well, the more He opens up, the less I'm taken out of it. See, and there's where the fight's at, is I don't wanna give up. I don't wanna give up this ability to say I'm choosing for God. I'm making a choice to God. As a youth leader, as a young man who had the opportunity to be a leader of several different churches of young people, that was a promising challenge. To hold out to young people, to say basically, I didn't say it this way because I knew who had the money, the parents had the money, so I wouldn't, I didn't say it boldly, but what I meant was this, the older generations dropped the ball. I mean, they've messed up big time. Now, this younger generation, we're going to be the generation that's going to take this into the glory world. We're going to be the one that's going to be dedicated and committed and get the job done.
Every generation has done the same thing, whether it's in church or out of church. Political world, it's the young liberals or the young conservatives. We're going to do it. We'll show the older ones how to really make it happen.
Yeah, and it's really, I liked what you brought in there, that in the church, out of the church. See, political world or Christian, which means it's the same motivation.
That's precise. It shows where the motivation is coming
exactly
from.
Exactly right.
Then, doesn't it
shows the error.
Yeah.
See, and you come to recognize that in Christianity, if the world's doing it, you can rest assured that's not how God's going to do it. But that's a hard lesson to learn. Because basically what we've done is went out in the world and picked up those techniques and brought them into the church. And
you're going to get too close to home. You're going to start saying Christian television is different than secular television because. No, anyway, let's go on, go on, go on.
Well, you know, it's a legitimate point, even if we talk about that. What makes this program go over is not the production capability of putting it on like Hollywood puts it on, but the working of the Spirit as you share with the guests and that Spirit taking in people's heart. That's the difference.
Insofar as we give room to the Spirit of God, it is effective in a spiritual way.
Yeah.
Insofar as it's the manipulation of our minds and our abilities to do it,
yes,
it's ineffective.
That's
spiritually.
Yeah. Now let's just push a little bit further.
Okay.
Since you introduced the subject. Excuse me. It goes a little bit further than that. Even in the developing of the day to day program, see, in the working of the program has to be spirit produced. See, now normally what we usually do is we'll sit down and get it together, and then we'll say, okay, now God, we need your anointing in this.
We'll plan it and say, now God, you bless it.
You anoint it.
See? Yeah, you anoint
and
it.
And we're just happy to use this because this is the same thing with everything. It's life, it's churches, it's ministry, it's everything.
But we'll use TV because that's where we are.
Of course, that's where we're at. See?
Okay.
And so in reality is, it, as you said a while ago, it'll look similar to the world, but it'll look altogether different to what's going on. The disciples said about Jesus in John 1, said, we beheld his glory. Well, the world just saw Jesus, the son of a carpenter. But you see, they saw something else because of the spiritual realm. Now, if that spiritual realm is working, they will see something else in what we call ministry. But that's where we have to move to. We have to move into the spiritual realm. But moving into the spiritual realm is, there's no act of the flesh that can get you into the spiritual realm. See, and that's what we want to get into the spiritual realm. God puts a desire in us, but the boxes up here tells us what we must do.
Yes.
You mentioned prior to Jesus being, you know, the way, the truth, and the life. Those are nouns. See,
okay.
The way. Now, here we are. Here's where we need to be.
Yep.
Here we are, and here's where we need to be. What we use is a verb.
The way.
The way, you see?
Right.
Doing something to get there.
Yes, there are steps I've got to take, and I will get to that place that I'll be in. Okay, yeah, go on.
See,
go on. So that, which is verbs, okay.
My whole background in academic world is, in a doctor's degree, is in church growth. And so we're going to have strategy. We're here. We need to go here. We've got to have a strategy to get here. Well, I've come to understand the strategy is what's keeping us from getting here. Now,
okay.
Now we may get somewhere that the world can look at as being successful, but it's because it looks like the world. See, I'm coming to understand that when we get there, like the disciples beheld the glory of Jesus, but the world saw something else. And
that's our struggle, because we're wanting to be seen by others.
Yeah.
In such a way that makes it look like we've made it.
Goes back to our identity thing.
Which is an identity problem.
It is.
It's right back at the beginning. We started with this whole thing. Okay, I'll let you go. Jim, keep going.
That identity, that ego that drives us, and this probably won't come out quite right, but ego is not a biblical term. It's a secular term, but Paul said to the Corinthians, because you're carnal, have to use the carnal terms. Just don't want that to be misinterpreted, but our ego keeps driving us. See, we become slaves to our ego. And for years, my effort to work in a church, I was working for myself. Now, I wouldn't have said that. You know, I wouldn't have said that I'm trying to climb the ladder and I'm trying to get the church known. I wouldn't have said that. I would have said, you know, I'm working for God. But I can honestly look back now and know what was driving me was this sense of fulfillment, the identity problem, sense of well-being because I'm doing. See, which comes back to the kernel issue of life, the kernel issue of everything. And because we don't understand the gospel, and sadly, we hear the gospel, and then sometimes we don't hear the gospel. But even if we're hearing the gospel, the boxes up here won't let it filter through. Or as Paul said, if our gospel's hid, meaning I don't hide it, by how I preach it.
No.
But if our gospel be hid, it's hid to them that are lost, in whom the God of this world hath blinded their minds, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. See, so the God of this world has blinded our minds. Now, what's the God of this world? See, the box will jump immediately and say the devil. But it's really not the devil.
I was going to say that, but I suspected that was a trick question.
Well, it wasn't meant to be trick question. Sometimes
it's our first response, but yeah. Go on.
Sometimes I say, don't answer, it's a loaded question,
because I
know what the answer is going to be, and it's going to be wrong, as I understand the gospel. But it's not the devil, it's really what made Lucifer the devil. See, the same thing that...
Okay, the very thing that caused him the problem is the very issue that we're having to deal with today.
Oh, yes. It's the issue that caused Lucifer to become the devil, the issue that caused Adam and Eve to fall. It's the issue that caused you and I to struggle. See, and it's the God of this world. And Paul would probably, and I can't speak for Paul, but he would probably call it the flesh in his understanding of what the flesh is. He said it this way, in the same passage of Corinthians, where he said, talking about being ministers, that our sufficiency is not of ourselves.
No, that's right.
That we should think anything of ourselves. See, that which is in us that causes us to think something of ourselves is the God of this world. See, it's actually how I'm coming to say it now. It's actually we become victims of our own blessings. We get blessed of God and
become effective, or at least we see effectiveness coming
out
in our lives, out of the flow of God.
Out of the flow of God.
Of God in our own lives.
Out of our own lives. And
sure.
So as this spirit in the vessel, this treasure in the vessel flows out of us, and we see the effectiveness, and we see God working in a marvelous way, something happens to this vessel, begins to perceive that it wants to experience that same thing again. See, and so then we try to make it happen again.
Precisely.
And so as we try to make it happen again, it becomes our reasoning. And if you look at Adam and Eve in the garden, that's the struggle. They see the fruit, it desires to make one wise. See, they and the serpent would say, God said that so because he knows you'll become as gods. So that's the reason why he said don't eat the tree. Well, a temptation is only a temptation when it's a temptation.
When it can be real. That's right.
When he said, you'll become as God, it hit a responsive note. See, because they wanted to be gods. And after they eat the tree, 10 or 12 verses later, God himself says they have become as gods. Now, as God, didn't say they become gods, but they became as God. Now, how they became as God was in the control of this decision-making process. See, if I come to a fork of the road and say, which way should I go? If I make the decision, I'm God over that decision.
That's right.
See, that's the reality, and that's what we keep trying to do. Now, as we stated previously, we're going to make good decisions. We're going to work for God. We're going to, try to do the right thing, but that's just as erroneous as doing the bad thing in the sense of it's us doing it. See, so it's tied up into that identity problem of coming to understand how we are to live this life. And we are able ministers, not of the letter,
but
of the spirit. Now, we read that and it was, not of the letter, but of the spirit. But what it means, not of the letter, is you can't dictate what, I can't dictate to you what you're to do. See, if I tell you what you should do, it's letter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there is no power in me telling you what to do. See, so you don't get any power when I say, this is what you must do.
No, that's right.
So, therefore, I must say it in such a way to persuade you to such a degree that you will be motivated enough to reach down and pick yourself up by the bootstraps and do it.
That's right.
However, when Jesus says it, the power is in the words that Jesus says it. See, so, and spirit.
Yes.
And Jesus speaks only in the spirit. He only in the spirit, not in, he does not use the head Now, this doesn't mean the mind goes into neutral and never thinks. But it thinks, but now it's controlled by the Spirit. See, Paul said to Timothy, God has not given us a spirit of fear. He's given us a spirit of power and love and sound mindness. Now, sound mindness means mind in control, not self-control.
In control.
In control. And if you read the verse, he tells you, he says, God's not given us a spirit of fear. He's given us the spirit of love, of power, and a sound mind. It's the spirit that produces the love, the power, and a sound mind.
Yes.
See, so the mind is spirit controlled. So the mind thinks, but it thinks because the Spirit is dictating to it, as Adam and Eve did before the fall.
See? And they were using their minds.
Yes.
A lot.
Living life.
Absolutely, fully.
To the fullest.
Yes.
And decisions were being made.
Yeah.
But it was God doing it. As I heard someone say just recently, the light that was there was the source of them doing it. Their sensing network,
yes.
the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, the sensing network was energized by the Spirit.
Totally cognizant of what the Spirit was doing and living out of that realm.
Exactly right. And the Spirit was producing all of that.
Absolutely.
Well, as it was producing that and we began to experience seeing and hearing and tasting and touching, we began to think, hey, this is good. You know, I want to do that. And so then we become the sense of our seeing. And so amazingly, when Adam and Eve, before they ate of the tree, they were blind, but they saw. Now, when I mean being blind, I don't mean their eyes was closed. No, they were still seeing, but they were blind. They were blind. Adam and Eve were blind, yet they saw. But when they ate the tree, their eyes were open, and
now
they became blind.
Now, they could see, but then they couldn't see.
Exactly right. Then they became blind. They could see, but they couldn't see. Now, see, that's where the struggle is at. That's what we want to deal with when we come throughout this week is come to understand that the things that we're doing is actually prohibiting us from experiencing it. Because basically we're trying to see with our eyes and hear with our ears. I preached for years and taught preaching classes for years and taught them how to give good speeches, persuasive speeches, to persuade the congregation that what you were saying was true.
So that you could implement in them these good things that would make them look spiritual.
Yeah.
Pardon me. I mean, but that was what it was.
Yeah, and I really wasn't trying to make them to look spiritual. I was wanting them to
be spiritual.
I know. But they were looking spiritual. But
pardon me, I was getting to the end result rather than the process.
In fact, it looks a lot like, and it's really scary. It's really scary as you begin to come to understand the gospel because Jesus' statement about the Pharisees, you're white as sepulchers, but full of dead men's bones. It breaks my heart, but that's what I'm saying today.
Yeah.
We're showing to the world this beautiful, beautiful structure.
Yeah.
You know, magnificent things going on. But the people
but
in the pews,
yeah.
People in the pews they're misery. They're hurting. Problems big time. Divorces and remarriage and fighting and abuse and it's just continuing on.
Yeah.
But we got this magnificent structure right here that gives to the world a beautiful image.
Oh boy,
we're
going to have to break. We got to come back. We'll come back tomorrow and continue on. It's a theme that the Lord's really been working my heart on. And the tragedy is, I look at myself and say, Willard, how much of what you do is motivated out of that area instead of out of simply a life flow in Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you, folks, it isn't hopeless. In fact, the more you let go, the more you gain. This is one of those things. The more you're willing to lose that part of your life, the more you gain His life. And that's the good news. That's really, Jesus came to give us good news.
Good news.
Great
Amen.
News. Okay.
Great news.
Well, James, thanks you for being with, us today. He's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I would say, James, it's good to have you back with
us
today.
It's good to be back. It's always good to be with you.
Thank you.
It's good to talk about Jesus.
Well, I think I was going to say, it's a subject matter that makes all the difference here.
Yes.
You know, we started off talking yesterday about, we're going to get to a parable, actually, today. But I said we're going to get to it yesterday. We never did. Although we spoke about the elements of it to some degree.
We were speaking about it. We just didn't mention the parable itself. The very idea when the disciples said, why do you speak in parables? And he says, because it's given to you to know, but it's not given to them. And that's what we were talking about yesterday, this inner working of the mind that keeps getting in the way of God speaking to our heart. We keep trying to move out of the fleshly realm into the spiritual realm by acts of flesh. And you can't get there. See,
but I think the confusion for us, if I can just say, James, is we talk about our body and to talk about the carnal realm. You know, we can understand that, you know, fleshly, but we don't relate mental and fleshly all the time. Do you understand?
Yeah.
You know, we understand the spirit, but we don't think of the mind as being, from a biblical point of view. And I'm using it with the flesh, the way the Bible speaks of it. We're not talking about this kind of flesh, but it speaks of the natural man.
Yeah, flesh does not mean flesh and blood, meat on this body here. You know, it doesn't mean that. It actually means a mindset, a way of thinking. It's a way of thinking where I'm in control, I'm thinking, I'm doing it, as opposed to God doing it. That's what flesh means in the biblical sense. The scripture verse that you used this morning spoke to me, because that was the first message I ever preached as a young man as a high school. In high school to a youth group. And of course, you know, being in high school, the oratorial skills were not there, but neither was the message either, because I missed it entirely. You know, coming out of the King James, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body a living sacrifice. So you know what I said to those young people. He said, God's looking for a group of young people that will present their body a living sacrifice.
Very and motivational.
Come off the pew, ready to walk forward and give my life. I surrender all. I do. And I led over one little phrase there that makes it possible. It said, I beseech you therefore, brother, by the mercies of God, that you present your body a living sacrifice. So you left out the power source.
Yes.
The therefore, yes. In that first verse, therefore, brother, means he said something. And based upon what he said, he's getting ready to say. Well, what he said back in Romans 9, 10, and 11, coming up to 12, was, it is not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God which showeth mercy. See, well, willing and running is me presenting myself a living sacrifice. See, and that's basically what I did in that message as a young man, which I wish I could say that was the only time I did that, but 25 or 30 years came along, I kept trying to get people to will it, make up your mind, and do. When he says, it's not of him that willeth, it's not of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy. It's the mercy of God that empowers us to do it. Now, the reason why we're not receiving that mercy is because we're trying to will it and run it. See, we're trying to present our body a living sacrifice.
Okay.
And mercy... For years, the last couple of years, I've kind of played mercy and grace a little against each other, but they're really kind of...
Well, they work together, don't
yes.
they? There's a need for them to be working
yeah,
together.
It's like a coin with two sides. I'd often describe mercy as not receiving from God what you deserve. And then grace would be receiving from God what you don't deserve. But I think it's a little bit fine, it needs to be tuned a little bit more as we get this brain out of the way, is that mercy is the compassion of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's the love of
mm-hmm.
God flowing mm-hmm. to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that love of God flowing to us is forgiveness, mercy. But more than just forgiving us is the empowerment to not do those things for which we need to get forgiveness for. See, and we have a tendency to leave that side out. That's the grace of God.
Precisely. I'll agree with you. Go on.
Yeah. And when we don't understand that, see, when I didn't understand that, I was standing up and giving an impossible challenge to a group of young people who, because they were young and hadn't found out yet that they couldn't. Now, see, you can't give that message to 45, 55, 60-year-olds. They just look at you and say, you're crazy, because we tried and tried and tried.
We still haven't been able to do it.
Still haven't been able to do it. But you get a group of 18, 19-year-olds who don't know yet they can't do it. They'll bite on that, because it plays through that flesh within us, the Adamness within us, to be able to work for God, earn what we can, merit what we can. We want, you know, we want to deserve. We want to earn God's love. See, and that's a part of us, you know, us, and all of us. And basically it comes because all of our life, as we grew up as young people, as kids in our family, we desperately needed to experience acceptance, approval, affection. If we got acceptance, approval, and affection, we had a sense of wellness about us. But in reality, we didn't get that to various degrees. Not because mom and dad necessarily hated us, it's basically because we didn't know how to, we parents didn't know how to show that love. And see, so we didn't get that, and so we set out on to try to earn it. And so we desperately tried to earn the love of our parents. We tried to earn the respect of our peers. We tried to, and we just spent our life doing that. And so much of Christianity today is doing now, trying to earn a sense of fulfillment, a sense of purpose, instead of letting the love of God flow through the family of God. Let's just say it this way. If the love of God flows through me to you, you will be accepted, approved, right, and loved. See, and so what you were trying to do to earn, it comes from the love of God. But that's just, that's what we've been talking about yesterday and today, is to recognize that this God loves us, and this love is the power source by which we become what we're supposed to become. But you see, we're often not getting that. It's getting to do, and so I try to do because I want to be accepted. You know, I want to be approved.
Sure,
you
sure.
know, I want to feel like people like me, and so I keep trying to do things to do that. And the sad reality is, you know, we keep getting let down by it. So what I'm suggesting is, why don't we shift our attention back to, it sounds a little crude, but shift our attention back to Jesus Christ rather than on us, what we're doing. See, and that's what the parable is all about. That's what the sower's parable of the sower is all about, is that if you look at that parable, it says that Jesus said he spoke in parables, many things in parables, and the sower went forth to sow. And the implication is that in the first century, he put his hand into the bag and he would throw the seed. And out of that throwing of the seed, some of it fell on the wayside, some of it fell in stony places, some of it fell in thorn-infested ground, and some fell on good ground. See? Same sower.
Right.
Same seed.
Yes.
But four different responses. See, it brought four different responses. So it wasn't the sower. It wasn't the seed. See, it was the condition of the ground in which the seed fell on.
Right.
Now, as we work through this and come to understand this, then the condition of the ground governed the response. Now, before we let the boxes jump in here.
I was going to say, the boxes are already working.
Already working, see.
Okay,
before we let the boxes jump in here, then we fall into this trap to say, well, then I must condition the ground. I'm
going to change the condition of my soil because I want to be a 60 or 100-fold soil.
Yeah, and you can't do it. See, the ground has no capability to change itself. See, so looking through this, 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold, and if you would ask any Christian, we all want to be fruit-bearing Christians. You know, especially because the emphasis is on us doing, you know.
Well, then, yeah, particularly.
We want to be fruit-bearing Christians. Well, and basically what we've done the last 20 years is we have taught people how to be fruit-bearing Christians. See, we've taught people how to witness. We've taught people how to pray. We've taught people how to grow churches. We've taught people how to do all these things, which is just a natural fruit that comes out of a seed that's had the opportunity to germinate, send forth root, bring forth the plant. See, so everything that we want to see is contained in the seed itself. Everything. See, if it's just allowed to germinate, send forth roots, bring forth the plant and the fruit. See, so what we have been spending our time is trying to make these fruit come out of doing whatever we do to the plant, instead of letting the word, as Jesus says in the explanation, that he that heareth the word, see, an implication is the word is the seed and the ground is our heart. Now, that's where the difficulty comes in. The ground's not our head. The ground's our heart. The ground's our spirit. See, and you can't churn the heart down here with the head. In fact, this is how we said it for years. You know, I understand it up here.
I just can't get it down
here. I can't get it down here.
Yeah.
And so we spend all of our time trying to get it out of here down to here. Wrong direction. Wrong process. It won't work. You can't do it. You can't get it from here down to here. See, it goes the other way. It comes into our heart, comes into our spirit, and then comes out up here. Or, as the Old Testament says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. That's what Paul meant in Romans when he said, if you believe in your heart and confess with your mouth, you shall be saved. Now, again, the boxes click on, two things we must do. Believe in our heart, confess with our mouth. But see, that's not what he's saying. That's our boxes interpreting that. As I go through some of this, people will say, well, why didn't Paul say that? Well, he did. We're just not reading it that way. Okay. We're reading it from where we're coming from. And so we interpret it altogether different. Mm-hmm. So when he says, believe in your heart and confess with your mouth, all he's saying is, if this word is in your heart and is allowed to germinate, send forth roots, bring forth the plant, there will be a confession out here. He's not talking about the mouth. He's talking about your life.
The word confession and life are very similar. I mean, that's the word.
Well, like in the King James, we hear the word conversation.
Yeah.
Like Paul said, the life that I live is not with flesh with wisdoms, but by the grace of God have we had this conversation in this world. Now, see, conversation, we hear talking.
Words, yeah.
But it's not talking about that. It's manner of living. So this confession is coming out of our mouth, but it's relating to our life. So all he's saying is, if the word, same thing in the parable, if the word is allowed to set with our heart, then it will produce life. If that life is being produced, you are saved. See, that's what he's saying. See, but we can't get this head out of here. We can't get this mind out of here. We can't get this thinking process out of here. And actually, the head and the mind is what's throwing us. See, that's what caused the fall. Listen to what Jesus said. Jesus said, he said, for judgment I've come into the world, that they which see not might see. Mm-hmm. Which, no problem there. It's the next phrase. And then they which see might be made blind.
That one's a tough
one. That's the one we struggle with, see. And then he says, and the Pharisee says to him, are we blind also? Now, if you remember Paul's statement about the Jews and the children of mm-hmm. God in the first century, they were instructors to the blind. They were instructor of babes, guide to the blind. So when they said, are we blind also, I think that's probably a statement that they were expecting of sort of a pat on the back.
Say, no, absolutely not. You guys have got all the insight in the world.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the response they got, though.
No, the response they got was, if you were blind, you should have no sin. But now that you say, we see, your sin remaineth. See, so tied into that sin remaining is this whole concept of seeing. Which brings us back to the parable again, the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. They see, but see not. They hear, but they hear not. See, you take Adam and Eve, when they ate of the mm-hmm. tree of the garden in the garden. Before, they were blind, but they saw. Afterwards, they saw, but were blind. See, and that's the reality is, you got to move out, as you were saying, you got to move out of this fleshly realm into the spiritual realm. See, now, anyone who's been in Christianity for any length of time, no matter what the tradition is, know that we need to be spiritual.
Right.
See, we must be yes. spiritual people.
Yes.
But what we don't understand is that other side of the coin, of one coin, two sides, how we become spiritual. See, that's that verse you were sharing with me the other day in Psalms, you know, that God is light and salvation. If you can remember, how does that go? How'd that go?
Well, the Lord is thy light and thy salvation. I mean, that's Romans or Psalm 27, verse 1. I mean, that's been working in my heart for weeks now.
Yeah, and as you were sharing, salvation, we understand that pretty good.
But light.
That's where we struggle.
That's a struggle one.
Yeah, that's a struggle.
That's
and,
right.
What you were sharing with me was so powerful that as it was working through you,
yeah.
And I don't need to be putting words
well,
in your mouth.
Well, I'm going to come back in the second okay. half. I'll talk about it. I'll come back okay. and we'll chat about the, you know, what the Lord really kind of revealed to my heart about this.
Yeah.
Because it isn't something that isn't, I hadn't particularly caught hold in this whole lot. You know, because again, I found it throughout the New Testament and the Old, God is revealed as light.
Yes.
Jesus said, I am the light of this world.
Yes.
And light, he's talking about spirit light here.
Oh, yes.
He's not talking about natural light. He's talking about spiritual light. And there's no spiritual light outside of Jesus. There's
exactly
absolutely
right.
none.
Yeah, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. See, life, yes, but the light.
The light of
life. Life. What does a walking in darkness person look like? It's a person that don't know where he's going. It's a person that's stumbling. What should I do here?
Okay, and what characterizes people that aren't seeing light spiritually in our world today? They are lost, and we're wondering why we don't have the answers in so many places of our world. I mean, we've got such intelligent people, and they're not getting the answers.
Yeah, intelligent more than ever before, and yet we're stumbling.
And more machinery available for these minds, and still not getting the answers that would really solve the life's problems.
And so we're not understanding that He's the light.
That's it.
See, and so we're walking in darkness, stumbling around, coming to a fork of the road. And you say, well, where could I go? Which way should I do? When I come to a fork of the road, should I go this way or should I go that way? See, and the tendency is to say, oh God, I've got to go to you and got to pray, got to show me which way to go. Well, that's true, but we also need to realize that when we're at the fork of the road, we don't know which way to go. It means we haven't been walking in His light. Because He knows which way to go.
He knows which way, yeah.
See, so
and we haven't been hearing. We haven't been seeing the direction.
Haven't been hearing. Absolutely. So we spend all our time saying, God, okay, you got to reveal to me. You got to reveal to me which way to go. What way should I go? Instead of saying, God, forgive me. Forgive me, Lord. Something has went wrong in my life because I don't know which way to go, which tells me I've been doing this instead of Jesus. And at that repentance of coming back, he just comes and says, God, I need your help.
Yeah.
He comes on the scene.
And that gives room now for him to reveal himself
yes.
in the situation. We're going to break. Sorry. We're coming back right back for those of you that are getting the full hour, which is a good bulk of the audience. Right now we're going to go to Betty and have a prayer time. I ended the session saying I was going to talk about something, James.
Yes. We're going to talk about an aspect of Christianity that many of are missing.
Well, I can't take any credit for this. It's what happens, you know.
Yeah.
The Lord does something in my
sure.
life. I was in my quiet time. It was last week sometime, I suppose. I was just in my quiet time. I was reading the passage in Psalm 27, and just the very first part of it. And you know, it goes on. And often we read a psalm, and I just want to read the whole psalm. That's my normal. A psalm a day is great for me.
Yeah.
But I started reading the psalm, and it started off, and I just read it, and it just like this. You know, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? And I was going to go on from that. And then I just felt to stop about it and just think about it. And salvation, I knew about it. I mean, began listing what salvation means to me. And, you know, in the New Testament, the word for salvation is sozo. It's Greek. And it means wholeness, health, well-being, just all kinds of,
yes.
just living in the blessings of God.
Yes.
Just the fullness of God's provision. Okay. But then I thought, but light. And that, it just... James, it just caught me short. I just said, you know, the Lord is my light. The Lord is my light. And what came to me when I was thinking about this was another verse came to my mind. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet, a light unto my path. That's later on. So I forget what number it is, 100 and something I think it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that psalm came to my mind. And I thought of how I tended to see the light of God. And my concept has always been, up until that morning, that when I read the Bible and I read God's Word, it adds to the knowledge I've got. It gives me insight besides what I already have. So in other words, it helps bring clarity.
Yes.
That was the way I saw it. But then this verse said, but He is my light. He's not some light. He's not an additional light. He is the light. He is my light and my salvation. And I thought, well, Lord, I haven't seen you as total light, because if I don't have light, I have darkness. I mean, that was a thought that came to my mind. And I was thinking, well, you know, how do I see this light? What do I perceive this light with? And I thought, you know, and the whole concept of spirit light rather than natural light
yes.
began to come through to me. And I began to realize that, you know, I need to have the facility to be able to see that light.
Yes.
Somehow. I need eyes that will see that light.
Yes.
In order to, for that light to be real.
Yes.
And anyway, I could go on about this, but what came to me was that people can have eyes and not see.
Oh.
People can have ears and not hear. People can have mouths or tongues and not taste.
Yes.
We can have noses and not smell.
Yeah.
We can have hands.
See,
and
we have the facility. You said you want the facility to see this light. Well, you have it already.
I have, but I'm not seeing it. Why am I not seeing it?
Yeah, because it comes in on the spiritual realm, and what causes us to get it on the spirit, keep it from getting on the spiritual realm, is the head up here.
I think our natural realm keeps the very spirit realm
from
coming through.
That's the parable. That's the reason why I wanted to share it, because that's the parable that he's talking about. Same sower, same seed, but four different responses based upon the condition of the ground. Now, as we work at condition of ground, what causes the ground to be changed? You know, what makes it acceptable ground and not acceptable ground? What makes it stony ground? What makes it thorn-infested ground? What makes it good ground? Well, in the context, in between in the Matthew account, he tells the parable, and then the disciples come and says, why do you speak in parables? And then he gives about five verses of this. They have eyes that see, that don't see. They have ears that don't hear. They said that these people's heart is waxed gross. And listen to this verse carefully. This people's heart is waxed gross, for their ears is dull of hearing, and their eyes have they closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand and be converted and not heal them. The implication of that verse is what's causing God to heal us and convert us is us. See, and in the context, it's our eyes and our ears. We're trying to see with our eyes and our ears rather than reading the light of life, Jesus Christ being the source. Let's go back to Adam and Eve in context of what the passage you were talking about. God formed Adam out of the dust of the ground. Now, his eyes, physical eyes were there, ears were there. All the sense organs were there. All the nerve endings were there. Everything was there except for one thing, the breath of life. See, when God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, then that sensing network began functioning.
Work. That's right. Okay.
It didn't have any capability to function. If it did, it would do it before he breathed into the breath of life. See, it's actually the Spirit of God that's the source of that sensing network. See, yes, they saw, but they didn't see. They heard, but they didn't hear. See, they were experiencing seeing, they were experiencing tasting, they were experiencing the full ramification of the sensing network. But the sensing network was not the source. The Spirit of God was the source. Now, for years, and there's a lot of people who will disagree with me on this, but for years in teaching theology, I taught we were endowed with life. Means God gave me life. But now I understand, well, that would be good for God to give me life. See, because it means I've become the source. Now I come to understand that it's not an endowment of life, that God didn't endow me with life. I experienced life because he who is life came into me. See, so the life source is the Spirit within me. See, but as I experience that blessing of God, I experience that. This is what I said yesterday. I became a victim of my blessing. See, the blessing was so good, I began to perceive that I had something to do with this. As this treasure in this earthen vessel begins to flow through the vessel, it's so productive, the vessel begins to think it can think.
It exalts itself.
It exalts itself.
It's true.
And so we come to then, the word is a lamp unto my feet. And the mental image is I'm walking down the road and the Lord is shining this light in front of me and I'm, see, well, that would be nice. Excuse me. That would be nice. But the reality, he's a lamp. He is the light source himself. I can't even walk unless he's doing it.
Exactly.
See, and that's where we have to come to understand that this endowment of life is not a substance that God gives to me, such as, here, you got life.
Right.
Now you can do with it.
No.
Yeah, see? And, or here you got power, you can do with it. No, that's not what he's saying. He says, I'm the light. I'm the power. See, and where the struggle is, and the parable is, if this thinking and seeing and tasting, we are doing it, that is indeed what hardens the ground, so we cannot let the seed penetrate. So to our degree of self-assertiveness or self-actualization or trying to experience life in the sensing network itself is what hardens the ground. The seed that is thrown on the wayside, and it means the road, which means it is much traveled. See, what broke the ground down or pushed the ground down so the seed could not penetrate was the much traveling of the people. Well, in the much traveling of my mind, in the exercising of my mind, trying to live in my mind, trying to live in the sensing network itself, is what hardens
the ground of my heart.
The ground of my heart that won't let the seed set. Now, let me introduce it today. It's so powerful. We'll talk about it tomorrow. When Jesus said, in explaining the parable, he said, "He that heareth the word and understandeth it not, the wicked one comes and takes it away." The fourth response, "He that heareth the word and understandeth it, fruit cometh forth." So obviously, understanding is vitally important. He that understands not,
has
nothing.
No fruit. Yeah.
He that understands comes
Much
forth
fruit.
Fruit. But again, our box is set in, and we think we know what understanding means. But we know what understanding means on the fleshly realm, the worldly realm. We do not know what understanding means on the Christian realm, on the biblical realm. See, the understanding in the worldly realm is an exercise of this mind. And if I'm not mistaken, there's five words in the New Testament that's translated understand. One of them is to know, to see. Second one is to see. Third one is an exercise of the mind. Fourth one is to put your mind upon it. All activities of the mind. However, that's not the word Jesus uses when he says, "He that heareth the word and understandeth." The word he uses means simply to put together. But the seed sets with the ground, it'll come forth plant, the fruit. See, when the word sets with my heart, it will produce. It has no concept of mind at all. And that's the reason why Jesus says, "I am the truth." Understanding is an experience with a person. It's not an activity with our head.
Mind.
See, and so what we try to do, okay, I understand that, understanding is an experience with a person, so I try to have this experience with a person with my mind. You see, you can't do it. You know, I met you a year ago, and we're slowly beginning to know each other, but the only way we know each other is I can study you, I can talk to your family, I can read the book, you know, but I can't know you. There's only one way for me to know you, and that's for me to have enough time with you where you open yourself up to me and you share your insights with me. That's the only way. See, that's the only way I know Jesus, is in this intimacy of letting him open himself up
yes.
to me.
Yes.
And the good news is he doesn't turn that off and on. See, that revelation is constantly coming. It's there all the time. It's flowing all the time. Out of the bosom of the Father, the Son. It's coming all the time. It's coming right now. See, it's just flowing right now. It's flowing right now everywhere. If we could just let that set with our heart, it would begin to change our life. Because everything that's needed to change our life is in the Word, the seed. Now, what keeps it from setting in, though, is the preconceived boxes up here. The mindset.
Tomorrow we'll come back to that, because I got a feeling the thorns and the thistles and all the rest of it relate to something.
Yes.